Shut up and sit down.
Do not self-destruct.
We decided to come and rescue you.
Good job.
Before the dark times.
I'll show you the dark side.
This is where the fun begins.
Hello there and welcome back to the Carbonite Crew podcast. Ladies and gents, nerds all around the world, thank you for joining me. I am Tyler, your host on this very fancy and classy five-star Michelin-rated podcast. Yes, everything I said was true, 141% true. All right, I gotta be honest with you guys. I have a lot of thoughts and feelings on this newest Boba Fett episode, Chapter 5, The Return of the Mandalorian, or The Return of the Mandalorian. I think that's the name of the episode. Chapter 5 dropped today, Wednesday, January 26, 2022, on Disney+. I just got done viewing this show about an hour ago. And, well, the episode comes in around 50 minutes. You know, with credits and intros, it's probably about 35-minute episode. But it took me probably an hour and a half to watch it because I kept having to rewind it to rewatch certain parts because some parts were just that good. They were that enjoyable. They're in the first 5 minutes. I watched that probably three times. Like it was amazing. And let's just get this out of the way. Spoilers ahead for this episode. If you haven't watched The Book of Boba Fett Chapter 5, stop listening to this episode right now because there are so many spoilers. And trust me, you do not want me to be the one to spoil this episode. Go watch it right now. Press pause on here. You know, cancel any plans you have. Go watch it right now. This episode was directed by the amazing Bryce Dallas Howard. Amazing actress, amazing director. She has proven herself time and time again. And this is the third opportunity she's had to produce or to direct a Star Wars project. She directed Chapter 4 and Chapter 11 of The Mandalorian. And this is her go at The Book of Boba Fett. And she did not disappoint. I saw someone else refer to this episode as a love letter to Star Wars fans, and I could not agree more. I absolutely loved this episode. It really was a love letter. I thought there was there were amazing elements. I thought there was, as I like to say, the fan service without the fan service. She knows what we want. Bryce Dallas Howard is a Star Wars fan, like. If you were unsure whether or not she was a Star Wars fan and maybe she was just directing to direct, no, she is a Star Wars fan. She has proven it to us time and time again. Don't ever doubt her. She is amazing. I want her to get her own movie. I'm calling for it now. Bryce Dallas Howard, please direct a Star Wars movie. I need it in my life. Heck, direct a Mandalorian film. That would be amazing. I know we have this wonderful series, but give us some kind of like film, theatrical film for The Mandalorian. Have her do it. It'll be amazing. That being said, this was technically The Book of Boba Fett Chapter 5, but in realistically, let's just call it what it is. This is The Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 1. That is what this episode is. It is an introduction, a setup, a prelude to Season 3. And honestly, though, it's perfect. It's great. I thought the way they executed things and told the story was great. I'd love to see the Mando and where he's at now. And speaking of, let's just dive into this episode and kind of what's happening. And I'll give you my thoughts and my opinions as the show kind of went on. All right, let me get my notes pulled up here because I'm clearly not organized. So the episode starts out in basically this meat cooler, right? Something you would probably see down at your local butcher shop or, you know, maybe even your a local grocery store. You know, straight up meat shop. And we get the nice silhouette of the Mandalorian behind the, I don't even know what you call those, like the plastic swinging things. And you know it's Mando right away. Like, you just know. You could have this show on mute, and you know this is the Mandalorian. But yeah, I was pumped from the get. You know, it was like, here he is. He's back. We knew he was coming back. We got the great tease at the end of Chapter 4, and it was awesome. Still has his Beskar staff, which is awesome. We see that he's still bounty hunting, because he finds the guy he's looking for, and he's got his little bounty beeper thing, that, you know, the tracker, the locator. So we see that he's back to kind of bounty hunting now that Grogu is no longer with him. And the guy says to him, you know, you look like a negotiator. You look like a reasonable guy. Let's negotiate. And Mando gives the famous line, I can bring you in warm. I can bring you in cold. And oh my gosh, guys, the first 15 minutes of this episode, I'm fangirling. Like, this is what I want. This is the Mandalorian is such a good show. And it was so good. We see the cronies try to attack him. He starts fighting back, and then he pulls out the Darksaber. I can't believe I forgot about the Darksaber. It slipped my mind that he still had it. And it's so good. He actually nicks himself with it, which looks very, very painful. I would not want to be on the receiving end of that. He uses the Darksaber, and he is just going just hard in the paint, right? Taking out guys, stabbing him. He looks like Darth Vader in the hallway scene of Rogue One. He is just going hard. So much so that he cuts the guy in half that he's hunting. And then, we don't see it in front of our eyes because it's very violent, but cuts off his head and bags it up. This was nuts. It was nutty. Like, it was so violent. Especially for, like, I mean, I know he's a bounty hunter, but I just, all the character development we got, I just did not expect to see this. Oh man, bounty hunting is not it's not a, you know, it's not your 9-to-5. It's definitely hands-on. It would definitely be on an episode of Dirty Jobs for sure. But it was just so violent. I honestly loved it. It was fantastic. And honestly, I just left this intro and I'm just like, give me season 3 of The Mandalorian, please. And that's before the rest of the episode. That's within the first 10-15 minutes. I'm shouting for Mando season 3. We see him go to this like weird space city. It's like this ring in space. It almost looks like an artificial city, kind of just kind of floating in space. It looked very much like what is that called? Nevadilir? I can't remember, but from Infinity War, Marvel's Avengers Infinity War, where a Thor makes Stormbreaker. But he's on this weird space city. It looks like it's around a sun or near a sun. It was kind of cool. But he delivers his bounty, very injured, and he leaves, and we see him meet up with the Armorer. Yes, the Armorer is back, and we also see Paz Vizsla. They are back. We get this nice little exposition. Vizsla says that there's only 3 Mandalorians left, and I'm assuming it is this group right here. Unless there is another one that he is referring to that we don't see, I'm going to assume it's just them 3, because there is a nice shot a few minutes later of them all 3 next to each other, and I'm assuming that is the shot that is informing us that they are the 3 that Paz Vizsla was referring to. One thing I really loved was the Armorer makes a comment about how she kind of scoffs and says, the Empire is only around 30 years. You know, we've been around 10,000, referring to the Mandalorians. And I honestly loved that so much, because Star Wars fans, you know, we all know the Empire only ruled for, around 30 years, which is no significant amount of time in the grand scheme of things. You know, we have all the new High Republic stuff coming out, and those were thousands of years, 1,000 years before, you know, the prequels. Like, 30 years versus 1,000 years, it's crazy, like, how it really is just an insignificant amount of time, you know, over the course of of all the stories that we already have. I kind of compare it to the whole, like, how, you know, Voldemort wanted to take over the world but couldn't get past the whole Hogwarts school thing. Like, I love it. That's kind of how I compare it to a little bit there. We learn a little bit about the Darksaber. We learn that the hilt is made of Beskar. I don't think we knew that before. Maybe we did. And if we did, I either am not remembering or I missed that somewhere along the line. But that's cool to know. We get the explanation of Tar Vizsla, how he was a Jedi, a Mandalorian. Many of you probably know that. Some of you might not know that, and that is okay. You learn that here. And we learn a lot here in this scene with all three of them, specifically from the armor. Like, she tells a lot, and the way they tell this exposition in this episode is really well done. It doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel out of place. It doesn't feel like they're just trying to explain it to me while I'm sitting on my couch watching the show. It feels like I'm learning, and that even Din is learning about the Mandalorian heritage. Right, so we're kind of learning about the Darksaber, its history, its curse, you know, what kind of hold it had on Mandalore and what it meant to Mandalore and the Mandalorians themselves. And we'll find this out in a minute, but, you know, Paz Vizsla's really eyeing that Darksaber there when the armorer gives it back to him. That was a little interesting, but we'll come back around to that. Don't you worry. But the armor explains the purge and the Night of a Thousand Tears, which is just a tragically beautiful, beautifully tragic name to such a significant event, almost wiping out all of the Mandalorians. But I just, that name caught my ear, Night of a Thousand Tears. But they show some flashbacks, the TIE bombers bombing the planet, you know, the atomic bombs. We see the Imperial security droids, like the K2 units, like K2SO from Rogue One. We see them. We see probe droids. I'm assuming they're looking for, you know, maybe Beskar. But we see them, and we just see these really sad images and flashbacks of when Mandalore was destroyed. And I do like how the armor says they were banished to the moon, so that's how they survived. They weren't on the planet at the time, which was, you know, nice little, you know, info, you know, so there's no plot holes there. But she says, the armor says, you know, where did you get the staff, the Beskar staff? And she's like, well, we need to make that into armor. It shouldn't be weaponry. Beskar was meant to, you know, protect, not attack. So she's like, we should really make it into something. And he says, I want to make it into armor for Grogu. Grogu, we love you. We love you, little man, little baby Yoda. Hope to see you soon. And in this exchange, excuse me if I'm all over the place. I try to detail out my notes while I'm watching the show. And there's just my emotions. There's so much I have going on in my head through all this and excitement. And Star Wars is the best thing ever. But I'm getting off track. During this conversation, I did want to point this out. When she's getting ready or, you know, preparing to make the armor, she's heating it up to melt it and everything. The armor mentions that Tar Vizsla, you know, was a Jedi a little bit ago and a Mandalorian. You know, he ruled. And in this conversation, Din says he wants to go see Grogu, wants to see how he's doing. And the armorer mentions, well, Jedi are forbidden from attachments, which obviously doesn't work, Anakin. But they are forbidden from attachments. And then Din kind of responds with, well, the Mandalorian creed is completely the opposite, where, you know, they value loyalty. Which, in my opinion, this exchange, a small exchange where the Jedi are supposed to do this, but the Mandalorians do this, two complete opposites. I think it's a yin and yang type situation where I think they're planting these seeds of, well, either Mando or more likely Grogu is going to become a Mandalorian Jedi. One of them is going to be the next quote unquote Tar Vizsla, where they rule Mandalore. They are both a Jedi and a Mandalorian. And I know there's all this talk about Grogu making a lightsaber. Will we ever get to see it? I'm kind of under the impression, and in my thought process, maybe someone does win back, like maybe Bo-Katan wins back the Darksaber, and then Grogu defeats her or someone else and takes over the Darksaber and rules Mandalore. Like, I think that would be absolutely amazing to see. I think that would be so, so cool to see. But she builds him something. She makes something for Grogu, like armor or something. We never see it. We don't really see it. We see some chain links, so maybe it's like a chainmail suit, like protecting that you'd wear under armor or something. I don't know. We'll see. But it was very tiny. She wraps it up, ties it up, a little nice little bow looking thing, and gives it to Mando. Now we see him training with the armor and lightsaber training, and you could tell it just looks heavy. He's having a hard time, and she says to him, "You're fighting the saber, and that's why it's so heavy. You need to fight your opponent, not the saber." We see Paz Vizsla come in, and he says, "Well, shit, maybe it belongs to someone else then. Maybe someone else should be wielding it. You want it in battle?" And they challenge Din to a duel, and they both agree. And right before this duel, they take off their jetpacks, which is cool, really respectful. You know, this is going to be just a fight. We're not going to be flying around, doing anything stupid. Like, we're going to fight. It's pretty evenly matched. The armor cuts off the duel, and they start talking for a second. Nice little banter back and forth. Well, the Mandalorian, you know, asks Vizsla, Paz Vizsla, "Have you ever removed your helmet?" He says, "Of course not. Never will. This is the way." Now she asks Din the same thing. Well, now we know that Din has taken off his helmet multiple times. Part of his character development, you know, his human side, his attachment side, which, you know, is important. He says that he has. She's like, "Well, get the F out." He's like, "Well, what can I do? Let me redeem myself." She said, "The only way to redeem yourself by creed is by going to the living waters in the mines of Mandalore." Well, mines are destroyed because Mandalore is destroyed. I doubt it, but we'll find out in season 3 of The Mandalorian, I am sure. So he leaves. And I just want to point out, or at least as I thought to myself, like, there's a point, right, where like these traditions just like outgrow themselves, right? Like, they're just kind of ridiculous. Like, Jedi attachments doesn't work. All these Mandalorian creeds, like, they don't all work. Things change, things evolve. That, and I'm assuming I'd like to think, or I do think, that this is one of those things where he's going to try to redeem himself, obviously, and he's going to realize that this is just stupid and it doesn't matter. This shouldn't matter. You know, I shouldn't have to hide behind this mask, you know. But we'll see in season 3 of The Mandalorian, which I'm still saying this is the first episode of, and I'm surprised this wasn't the first episode of season 3. Mind you, this is the Book of Boba Fett we're watching. I never saw Boba Fett once in this episode. Just FYI. Din has to take a commercial flight. He ain't got a ship. Razor Crest is destroyed. He has to check all his weapons, and we see him taking out all his weapons. It's great. He even puts the Darksaber in there. He says, "I know what's in here." But while he's on the cruiser, the Star Cruiser, he's looking out the window, you know. Looks like he's in a sad music video or something, but there's this little Rodian in front of him that turns around, and it's so cute. He waves at him. It's the most adorable thing ever. But you know he's got to be thinking about Grogu, right? And then we get this beautiful shot. I loved it. He's looking at the little wrapping that he's going to give Grogu when he sees him, and it looks like Grogu. It looks like Grogu. It's got the little circle and the ears looking bow ears things on the side, and it was so heartwarming and touching, and it was amazing. And we all love Grogu and Lucasfilm and Disney and Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, and they know that. They know they're teasing us. But we get to Tatooine, because that is where Mando is going. We see Crazy Lady. She's back. Paley Moto. She's back. And she's like, "I got something better than the Razor Crest," because she reached out and said, "I got something better." She's got a Naboo N1 Royal Fighter. Yes, as seen in The Phantom Menace. And I've always loved these ships. I thought they were the cool designs. As a kid, I loved playing with my little toy Starfighter. And it was a shame we never got to see them again in live action. But they're back. You know, she says they're not, they were built before the Empire, so there's no, they're not under Imperial radar, or, you know, probably any radar, because that was all before that. So they, we see them building it together. It's so cool. We're learning so much. I do want to say Peleamoto makes this really weird comment where she says she dated a Jawa and that they were furry. That's just information I didn't need to know in my life. And now that I do know it, it's probably going to keep me up at night. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. Didn't need to know that. But what I do want is a little BD droid that was helping Mando out with a flashlight and then helping him do his Tony Stark like hologram of where parts go. I think Mando needs to take him and have it be his little droid. A little droid friend, especially with Grogu not around, because I'm sure it'll be a while before we see Grogu even in season 3 of The Mandalorian. I think he should have that little BD unit. I already see the chemistry, and I am here for it all freaking day. Pele says Jawas go get her whatever she requests, and in exchange, she lets them dig through her trash. So these are little intelligent raccoons that they bring things that you need, and then they go through your trash because that is all they want. Which is great. And at one point, we see them bring back a cryogenic density combustion booster. Or, if you're not familiar, the thing that Luke and Han tried to use to stop the trash compactor in A New Hope. Yes, it looks like a smaller version of one of those, whatever that is. But he puts that in the ship, and it fits perfectly. And we see him testing out this Naboo starfighter. And the thing is cool. And he's going through, to, you know, the desert and the cliffs. And I'm getting pod racing vibes from Star Wars Episode 1. And the Book of Boba Fett, I mentioned this last week, has done a great job of giving us snippets of like Episode 1 and Episode 2. And making the prequels just feel a little more full. They feel fuller. There's more depth to them, I feel like, and I absolutely adore what they're doing with these little itty bitty details. I love it. While he's in space, because he shoots this bad boy into space to see what it can do, he gets pulled over because he's having a little too much fun. Yes, having a little too much fun. He gets pulled over by two New Republic officers. They whoop whoop him. They're trying to get a read on his plates, so to speak, his registration. He tells them, "We just built it, I'll get it taken care of." And I do want to point out, if you did not notice, one of the officers is played by Max Lloyd-Jones. Now, if you are not familiar with Max Lloyd-Jones, Max Lloyd-Jones is actually the actor who portrayed Luke Skywalker in the finale of The Mandalorian for season 2, before they CGI'd Mark Hamill's face on. That was him that held Grogu, that was in that whole scene. So it's really cool to see him cameo here. Is he just that awesome of an actor and that guy that they brought him back to do more stuff? Or was he on set doing some, I don't know, Luke Skywalker stuff? I'm just saying. Maybe we'll see Luke Skywalker in the Book of Boba Fett. I am just saying. But we see Mando. He gets questioned about some stuff that was going on in Nevarro because his voice sounds familiar. He takes off. Not into hyperspeed. His ship is just that fast. And I do love that whole interaction between him and the other officer. I am blanking on his name, so I do apologize. But it was the officer from season 2 of The Mandalorian. And I think we're going to see him in the future a little bit. But he goes back to Tatooine. And what do you know? What do you know? Fennec Shand is waiting for Mando because she's got a job for him. She says, "We need you to help Boba Fett. Here's a payment." Mando says, "Nope. This one's on the house." I imagine that's how he said it. That something like that. It's not what I heard, but that's how I hear it in my head. "This one's on the house." He says, "I'll do it. I'll do it for free. Help out an old friend. But first, I have to visit a little friend." Oh my God. Another Grogu reference. What a great episode 1 of season 3 of The Mandalorian. And again, I'm joking. Clearly, this is the Book of Boba Fett, chapter 5 somehow. But I absolutely love this episode. Grade for this episode, my highest grade yet was 8/8.5, you know, and this is a solid 10 out of 10. I know this episode, I know there's little critiques you can make. There's little nuances, you know, nitpicky things, but this is a 10 out of 10. And honestly, my biggest nitpick of this episode is you just reminded me that there was a far superior show, Star Wars show out there. Not that I hate the Book of Boba Fett. I do not by any means hate the Book of Boba Fett. I think there's a lot of great, great things in it. I just think the stories, it hasn't been brought together yet. I think that's the problem. I think that's a lot of people's problem with the show. And they might not realize that. It's just the story hasn't come together quite as quickly or as cohesively as people would like. But yeah, this show reminds us the Mandalorian is still out there and that we want the Mandalorian and we want Grogu and we want season 3, which hopefully will come later this year in November, December. But we will see. 10 out of 10 for this episode. I absolutely loved it. And I'm very excited for the next episode. We have two more episodes left of the Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 6, Chapter 7. And I'd like to think that everything's going to come together and we're going to get this really cool conclusion. And I believe Ming-Na Wen actually came out in a recent interview and stated that the finale was going to like change the course of Star Wars. Oh, wait, this is what she said. So she said it will change how fans see the show. And I'm assuming, and I've been banking on this since like episode 2 or 3, that the end will make sense. And I do like movies or shows that the ending brings everything together. I think that's a great, a lot of comedians will do that with their stand-up routines. You know, the joke will bring it full circle back to the first joke and it just makes it feel complete. And I'm going to assume that's what's going to happen here. I probably shouldn't assume, especially in Star Wars, but I am holding on hope that's what happens. We have two more episodes to find out. Let me know what you guys thought of this episode. I probably really could have rambled for 45 minutes to an hour. I apologize if I talk fast. I have a lot of thoughts. I try to get them out to the world, to people who don't want to hear them, because that's just what I do. Because why not? Why not? I can, and I'm gonna. Thank you guys for listening. Come join our Facebook group, a Carbonite Crew, a Star Wars fan group. Come join it on Facebook. Come join our community. There's memes galore, theories galore. It's so fun. Come join. Or you can just join our Instagram. Follow us on Instagram and just look at pictures of Star Wars things all day, because that's fun too. Who doesn't like that? Or you can come join us on Twitter and follow the Carbonite Crew on Twitter to like and retweet things, because Twitter's fun too. Guys, I'll see you next week for the Chapter 6 of the Book of Boba Fett. And until then, may the Force be with you. This is the way.
Another happy landing.